Lincoln picked me up at the airport on my unofficial visit to Texas Tech. And we hit it off right there. And he told me how many yards I would throw for.
And you would have.
Hello and welcome to Always College Football. Today's Friday, July 8th. I'm Greg McElroy. Along with me, as always, is Mark Kubiak. We appreciate you joining us wherever it is that you're consuming this podcast, whether it's on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, or if you're watching on ESPN's YouTube channel, we really appreciate you. Please like, rate, and subscribe. Hit us up in the comments, or you can email the show, alwayscollegefootball@gmail.com. Any interaction, any feedback would be very, very helpful for us as we navigate throughout this journey. We have a great game plan on tap for you today. We're going to talk about why all these changes to the college football landscape are not necessarily a bad thing. Plus, we're going to be joined by USC head coach Lincoln Riley. And in full transparency, we taped this interview before the news was announced that USC was going to leave the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. So we'll dive into what the Trojans might be like on the field this year, and then we'll wrap things up with our first visit to the mailbag. But first, let's talk about it. Look, a lot of people are talking about how insane college football has become the last couple of years. But do you realize that college football has been insane since the start of the BCS era, way back in the 90s? But really in the last couple of years, we've seen changes when it comes to the NIL. We've seen freedom of transfer. We've seen the sport navigate its way through a global pandemic. However, I feel like the narrative surrounding the sport is that we never change, we never adapt. And I also feel like with every change, people seem to insist that this is the beginning of the end. Well, let me just look at it from this perspective. College football has experienced unprecedented growth in popularity since 1998. And if you look at what the sport once was, it was an extremely regional sport, and it's become just the tiniest bit more mainstream. Now, I understand that 2020, 2021, and 2022 has certainly felt chaotic, for lack of a better word, but it's far from unprecedented. Change has been a big part of the sport for the last 100 years. And it's been going on for the last 25 years with massive changes that haven't stopped the progress. How many programs do you think changed conferences in the BCS era from 1998 until 2013? Would it be 25, 30, 50? How about 78? That's right, 78 programs changed conferences in the BCS era. Not only did almost 80 teams change leagues, but 14 programs moved from the FCS to the FBS. Three new conferences were formed, and three leagues shut down. So don't get me wrong, the last calendar year has been absolutely chaotic. It's been nuts. It's been wild. But let's look at the final year of the BCS. That was 2013. It went out with a bang. There were 17 programs that moved that year. ACC bumped its membership to 14 by adding Syracuse and Pitt from the Big East. And the Big East morphed into the American Athletic Conference, welcomed UCF, Houston, Memphis, and SMU, all jumping from Conference USA, which managed to retool once again to survive another wave of poaching. Well, what's gone on the last week is crazy. It's not unprecedented, and I'd hesitate to start declaring the end is near in college football and that college football is dead. I would sum up the recent changes with one word. It's uncomfortable. You can't tell me that they're bad. You can't tell me that they're good. We simply don't know at this point. But what I do know is that the first time I went off a high dive, I was uncomfortable. The first time I drove a stick shift, I was uncomfortable. And the first time I swung a golf club in public, I was really uncomfortable. Now, at first, all those things felt really unnatural to me. But in time, they became very enjoyable. So I would just encourage everybody, let's just sit back, let's relax, let's not make any prognostications, and let's just see what happens. Now, without much further ado, let's visit with the head coach of the USC Trojans. He's Lincoln Riley.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Happy to be joined now by the head coach of the USC Trojans, Lincoln Riley. Lincoln, it's still kind of strange for me to say head coach of the USC Trojans. Has it kind of sank in for you just yet, or what?
It has. It was certainly different for me in the beginning as well, but definitely the dust is starting to settle. Things certainly starting to feel more normal and at home.
It's funny because I've known you longer than just about anybody else in the profession, I feel like. For those that are unaware, Lincoln picked me up at the airport on my unofficial visit to Texas Tech. And we hit it off right there. And he told me how many yards I would throw for. And I think knowing that offense, coach, I think knowing that offense, I think we would have potentially put some numbers up. But you at the time were, what, 20 years old or something along the lines of that. Now, 18 years later, here you are, the head coach at not just your first blue blood job, but your second blue blood job. And I'm just curious, when it comes to the transition to USC, what is it that you've learned so far that maybe you just didn't know that much about prior to taking the gig?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, there's so much to these jobs. There's so many kind of intricate details that you're not necessarily going to find out on a first day, or find out as somebody in the profession that sees these other jobs. And you know, there's some of the obvious parts that you see of this job. Obviously, the benefits of being in one of the biggest markets in the world, you know, the great weather, the history, the great academics, all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think kind of how interconnected the USC kind of Trojan family is, and the influence that it not only has in just Southern California, but really kind of this, the entire West Coast. And I think you feel that. I think the other thing would just be how hungry everybody is here for this program to be back where it belongs, and how important that is to not only everyone at SC, but I think just football on the West Coast in general. It's important that your historically, you know, great programs perform that way. And so that's a cool responsibility. It's a fun, it's a fun place to be right now. There's a lot of energy, a lot of excitement, and we've loved every minute so far.
Well, I've been out there a few times, coach, and it's because you and I mean, we're very close in age, you being 38, I'm 34. The team that I grew up idolizing was USC. I mean, because in my most formative years, it almost felt like they never lost. I mean, like the Reggie Bush era, the Leinart era, the Carson Palmer era, you name it. It's almost like when they lost, it was, you know, front page news. So as you've looked at what's happened in the last decade, two decades, since that level of dominance, things have changed drastically in the world of college football. Is USC, because of their newfound commitment, are they prepared to be competitive amongst the super elites in college football based on what you found out here in the last 5-6 months?
100%. And really, there's been – what was intriguing about this was there's been zero hesitation to do so. Yeah. I mean, it's a program I think that's very, very proud, and it should be. The history is as good as it gets in our sport, but it's also been humbled. And you feel that, you do. There's some things that the program needed to do from a resource standpoint, from facility standpoint. There's, you know, that you've got the settings right, the pieces are there, but you've got to, you know, you've got to continue to update, and you've got to continue to adapt with the things that are changing in college football. And I think there's a sense of, I know I had this with all that is changing in college football right now, like no place, there's no university, in my opinion, and no football program that could benefit more from the recent changes in college football than USC. Yeah. It's just, we all know, I mean, college football typically fits in the bucket of, you know, a smaller market town, you know, very good, you know, good academics and typically up and down programs. I mean, that's typically, you know, you could probably put about 90% of college football programs in that kind of in that bucket. And this one's just very unique. I mean, obviously the elite academics here, the huge market, there's just, it's primed. I mean, I think everybody around here feels that it's very, very primed. And now there's a lot of work to be done just because the setup's there doesn't mean that it just happens. And it's, you know, we've had a good stretch here. I think the first 6 months have been very, very positive on a number of fronts, but there's still so much to do. But the things are in place to get it done. And now it's just work. But the commitment is, and the alignment, you notice it right off the top. Like there's a laser focus by everyone involved here to get this thing done.
You can sense the urgency just with everything that you've been given and the acceleration that it feels like the program's on to getting back to the top of college football probably sooner than later. When you think about that big market mentality, you referenced it. I've actually hypothesized for a while, and you just came from Norman, Oklahoma, which is the epitome of a college town. Everything about Oklahoma centers around the university. I've hypothesized that it's tougher today, especially in NIL, because guys have money. It's tougher to win in big markets because of the distractions. Is that an unfair characterization of trying to put forth a championship caliber program when there's so many bells and whistles at your disposal as a college athlete now?
Yeah, because I mean, I think, you know, and we've all been in different spots, but there's distractions everywhere. Right. I mean, there's not a college campus on the country that doesn't have distractions. The reality is you've got to get the right people. The reality is you got to have guys that are focused enough to be able to put those distractions off to the side. Because, you know, with what people would say distractions, I also would look back at that and say, man, look at the opportunities, right? I mean, for guys to be able to come out here and experience so many unique things, I mean, kind of in this journey that's going to shape them as they get onto that next big chapter in their lives, there's just so much you can do out here from an educational standpoint, from just to be able to experience all that this place has to offer. And I just think it just creates opportunities for our guys that are, you know, tough to replicate anywhere else. And so I think I honestly think in a lot of ways, again, that this program obviously has historically been great. I would argue that I think there maybe hasn't been a time in history where maybe it was more set up to have success because of all that's changed. This thing has a niche here and I'm excited about what we can put in front of our guys right now and what we feel like we can build here together.
No, it's special. There's no denying that. One that issue that has plagued SC for, gosh, the better part of 15 years, it feels like, since Mark Sanchez really came out of modern day. I guess there were times, Barkley, for instance, of course, staying at home. But there have been so many great players from California or even from Hawaii to a certain extent where USC was a de facto, we're going to SC, doesn't matter. No one else even bother calling because I'm going to be a Trojan. That's changed a little bit. For instance, last year, you see CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, two California kids, both playing in the Big Ten and the SEC respectively. So how do you anticipate changing that so that there's a real sense of pride for those California kids that want to call Southern California home for their college destination?
I think it's already changing. I mean, I think you look what we just signed, in terms of players out of high school. I mean, we were here, we had about 3 weeks before signing day, and we signed, certainly the top couple of players in this state without a doubt. And some others that we feel really good about. And then, you know, everybody can see kind of the start that we're off to in the 23 and the 24 class. So I think that love, that sense of kind of pride for guys in the state of California and USC has not gone anywhere. That's been my, as I've is it kind of gotten into the weeds, gotten boots on the ground here, been out to go visit these high schools, had these players on campus. The affinity for USC in this area, like that connection is still as strong as ever. But we've got to give them a reason to come here. And I think guys are seeing that. I think coaches, families are seeing that right now. I think everybody feels the momentum. Obviously, we've got to go capitalize. We've got to go win. We've got to go do our jobs and do the job that we were brought in here to do at a high level. But I was kind of interested of what that would feel like. You know, I'd recruited this state before. I have a strong feelings about the talent in this state. I was interested what the reception would be when you're coming in with that SC logo. And that there's a deep connection between this school and people in this state. And that is absolutely still there. And I think so many of these great players jumping on board with us here before we've even played a game, I think shows that. And then I think that's got a chance to, you know, grow back into what it used to be.
Well, obviously when you were at Oklahoma and you can go into the state of Texas, you say, I'm a Texan. Like I can go in there. I'm from here. I know you guys, like I grew up in the state. You had the immediate access to the high school coaches and the importance of those relationships and mending those relationships and creating those relationships. Is it a similar structure in California in being able to try to kind of endear yourself to guys that might initially view you as a bit of an outsider?
Yeah, it definitely helps that we've spent time out here. If you look at a lot of our staff, they either have, you know, West Coast ties, we're from out here, recruited out here. And so I think that certainly helps. And then again, I go back to the one thing with just about every high school coach in the state, or the majority that I come in contact with, is they want SC to be great again. Yeah. And they have some of the same memories of this program that you mentioned with Reggie and Matt and, you know, Coach Carroll, all the great teams, the great history. And so I think that connection, kind of that common bond, is there from the beginning. And then I think they see that this thing's trending in a very positive direction. So, there's still a lot of work to be done to build the relationships the way that we want. But I think it's off to a great start. And a lot of our history here of spending time on the West Coast has been a kickstarter for that.
Well, you put together a remarkable staff. Should come as no surprise. Your staff at Oklahoma was amazing. A lot of those guys with you, Alex Grinch in particular. As you guys have now transitioned to USC, do you expect the program, as far as the offensive and defensive philosophy, is it going to mirror what you did at Oklahoma, or do you anticipate changing because the league's different than the one that you just competed in the Big 12?
There'll be pieces of both for sure. Schematically, we've always taken pride on all sides of the ball of being on the cutting edge and being guys that innovate and can adjust to what our opponents are doing, adjust to the personnel that we have. So that certainly won't change, but I think we'll continue to evolve. And then I think too, there's some differences in just the nature of the programs. I mean, I've said it many times. Obviously, I took over a program that was doing very well at the time I took over with Coach Stoops in Oklahoma. So we certainly changed some things along the way, but there was probably a little bit less to change and more to just continue to try to build on and find ways to be better. This is a different situation, obviously. But with that, it also kind of provides a kind of a blank canvas, right, to like kind of start and build exactly the way that you feel is best and that we as a staff feel is best. So there are some advantages there. I mean, without a doubt, I think kind of instilling the culture and kind of the mentality that we believe in some ways, there's the give and take, right? There's the other program took over in better state, a better culture, you know, all of that. But maybe more difficult to sometimes make the changes you want to make. Whereas here, to be able to start from the ground floor with these guys, there are some built-in advantages. And we've felt like we've seen some of that here in the first few months. So we've enjoyed that part of it. So, to answer your question, there's going to be certainly parts that were the same. We won a lot of games at OU, had a lot of success. So, you know, we're not going to just completely scrap what we're doing. But I do think there's areas that we feel like we can be better as a staff. I know there's areas I can be better as a head coach. And we want to adapt to what we feel like we can be here at SC.
Well, you're a perfectionist then, because you say if there's ways to get better and you're 55 and 10. You know, it's pretty rock solid. It's difficult to go up from even that point. But you talk about where you can be better. What would maybe be something that you would do differently that you did at Oklahoma that you think might actually, the second time around running the program, would there be something specific that you'd like to do differently that might help you out down the road? And if you get access to the playoff, have obviously a remarkable chance to be very, very competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot. I mean, I think relative to the playoff and competitiveness, I mean, I love the opportunity, I think, to build a roster that I think can be the nation's best here. Yeah. Again, that's going to take time. We all understand that. That's not a microwave process. But I think the roster that you can build here can be as good as anybody, anywhere, anytime. And so excited kind of for what the future looks like from a roster standpoint. As far as myself, I think doing a better job, and I think I've really tried to embrace this opportunity of kind of what we mentioned before, that blank canvas, to really build a culture that where we needed to make a lot of changes to be able to build that from the ground up. And that's challenged me in different ways, and that's been good for me. And it's kind of opened up areas, you know, when I look back on my time at Oklahoma, where I could have done a better job there. I mean, without a doubt. And you're always trying to push the right buttons with the team and get the team in the best mindset that you possibly can. And that's, you know, that's always it's a tight line, right? It's a tight rope to walk. And but I think being in this situation has pushed me to become better. It's exposed areas that I could have been better at OU. And giving me confidence that I will be better, and I know I'll need to be better for our guys here at SC.
Coach, you won't be taking the field without any familiar faces. I mean, there's a lot of people that came with you from Oklahoma, Caleb Williams in particular, and several others that have transferred in. You've been extremely active in the transfer portal. And look, I think USC sells itself. I mean, there's no denying. If you were to ask me as a 17-year-old kid, hey, where you want to go to school? If SC would have offered, it would have been real tough to turn down. So when you think about how much you've prioritized the portal and used the portal, is this just a one-year thing, or do you anticipate this being a real big part of how you build your roster annually in the years to come?
It's definitely going to be a part of it. I don't think it'll, my gut is it won't be, it'll kind of tear its way down,
right?
As the roster builds and we build some of the depth and the talent base that we feel like we should have here. But yeah, when we came in, I mean, we had a choice to make. I mean, you have to build the roster one of two ways. And we just felt like that the high school route might potentially, if we went heavy in the high school route, it was going to probably put us in a position where we had too many guys that needed time to develop. Plus, you know, there was a lot of guys at that point, you know, high school guys are the majority are making their decision, you know, in December. And we got here, you know, basically at the beginning of December. I mean, it's just very, very difficult to do in that time frame. So I think it was very, I don't feel like it was a very hard decision for us to sit back and say, hey, we need to really look at this transfer portal and try to invest and try to flip this parts of this roster. And so that was our goal from the beginning. I mean, that was, we laid it that plan after being here for a couple of days and, you know, feel like excited about the work we've done in it. I think it shows kind of to your point, you know, you graduated several years ago, SC a little bit closer at that point to kind of the wild success. There's been a little bit of a lull here over the last several years. And I think the point being is that, yeah, the power of SC is still that appealing that a lot of the top players in the country wanted to be here. Like they kind of believed in what we were doing. They, before we've ever played a game, they believed in this school. They believed in the history of this place and what it can be. And it's kind of cool to see, you know, some of those guys kind of share that vision so early on.
Well, we couldn't be happier for you, man. We know it's going to be awesome to watch, and we look forward to seeing you put your fingerprints on a program with whose history speaks for itself, man. Thanks again for the time. We look forward to visiting again soon.
Anytime. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What a great conversation with Coach Riley. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot to like about USC this year and what they've added in the transfer portal. They certainly don't feel like a team that's coming off of one of their worst seasons in their history. Caleb Williams will be coming off a freshman All-America performance at quarterback. He only started 7 games last year at Oklahoma, and there were some really great moments with him under center. There were also some moments that left a little to be desired, most of the Kansas game being a great example of that, but you got to feel like he's poised to take a huge leap in year number 2 in Lincoln Riley's offense. He leads a star-studded cast of offensive weapons that include the Biletnikoff winner in Jordan Addison, Oklahoma's second leading receiver from last year in Mario Williams, Jerry Rice's son, Brennan Rice, who transferred in from Colorado. Add that to Gary Bryant and Taj Washington, and their receiver room is absolutely ridiculous, which is nothing new for USC. But I think maybe the most under-the-radar addition as far as their offensive skill is concerned is Travis Dye. He's a workhorse, the running back formerly of Oregon. He led Oregon in rushing and receiving last year and departs Oregon as their 5th all-time leading rusher. Couple that with really quality quarterback play and a dangerous cast at wide receiver, he might be poised for a huge season in Lincoln Riley's offense. They know they'll be able to score. They might get into several shootouts, feel really confident about that. But will they be able to stop anybody? Alex Grinch comes with Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma, trying to improve a defense that gave up nearly 32 points a game. Now, he's been in the situation before. If you look at the turnaround that he's stepped into at Oklahoma and the turnaround, he spent some time at Ohio State too, but the turnaround that he experienced at Washington State was pretty dang remarkable. He basically took a team that was the bottom of the barrel in almost every defensive statistical category, and he made them halfway decent. He actually made Washington State, they were at one point in the top half of almost all defensive metrics by the time Alex Grinch left Pullman. So you got to think that his style of defense, well, it's going to create a lot of disruption. He does a lot of movement. He does a lot of twists. He does a lot of stunts. And he puts a lot on the shoulders of his defenders at all three levels. It might be with some growing pains there in the early going, because if the defensive line is moving to the right and the linebackers are also moving to the right, guess what that can create? It can create big holes if guys aren't all on the same page. So there might be some growing pains, and you might see USC getting to some shootouts early, but in time, by the time they get to the end of the year, one would assume, based on Alex Grinch's history, they'll be playing pretty solid in creating disruption along the line of scrimmage for the opposing offense. I'm bullish on USC this year. I think 9 wins is certainly reachable. Those that are referencing a possible college football playoff berth, I got to see some improvement in the front 7 defensively before I'm willing to go that far. All right, it's time to turn our attention and interact with our absolutely wonderful viewers and listeners. Let's go to our mailbag.
All right, Greg, Lanham in Louisville. Could you see Stanford going independent and aligning closely with Notre Dame? I know the big buzz is around ND's next move, if there is one, but they can let the chips fall where they want. Do you think Stanford would be in lockstep? Thanks. Looking forward to more episodes.
It's a great question. I mean, Stanford is undoubtedly one of the best athletic departments in the country. If you do a little due diligence on the well-roundedness of Stanford's programs in the 28-year history of the Director's Cup, which is awarded annually to the nation's best athletic department, Stanford's won it 25 times. That's right, 25 times out of 28. Now, Texas won the last two, and North Carolina, they won the inaugural Director's Cup back in 1993-1994 school year. Stanford's won it every other year. A 25-year run was broken by Texas 2 years ago. The athletic department is phenomenal, as good as it gets. But unfortunately for Stanford, these moves are almost exclusively about what the university brings in football. Now, I'm sure basketball is taken into account. I'm sure some of the Olympic sports are taken into account. And the academic prestige with Stanford is second to almost no one. But if Notre Dame will allow Stanford to join them in lockstep, and Stanford would do backflips in an effort to celebrate the invitation. But one has to wonder, why do Notre Dame and Stanford play every year? I've always thought it was because Notre Dame wanted to at least have one game a year on the West Coast. Now, we know that USC accounts for a game on the West Coast every other year. Well, guess what? Stanford serves as that exact same model. So it guarantees a West Coast trip for the Fighting Irish annually. So to sum it up, yes, Stanford 100% would be on board with an invitation to latch themselves to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. But I'd be shocked if Notre Dame were willing to align themselves with the Cardinal. Thanks so much for being with us on Always College Football. Please like, rate, and subscribe. And we're open to feedback too. Give us some feedback. Email us at alwayscollegefootball@gmail.com and check us out on Twitter at @alwayscfb. That'll do it for Mark Kubiak. I'm Greg McElroy. Remember, enjoy it out there, and it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.